Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed, and that's a good job because it's quite a long time since I did the last review. Anyway, joining me this episode is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And Juliana read some of this book too.
All right.
Any questions before we start off? Like, why I read it or anything like that.
Yeah, why you recommended this book to
me. Well, it wasn't that I maybe I did recommend it to you. The reason why is because I have lots of good memories of reading the novels of C.J. Sherry, who is the author of Down Below Station, which is the book that we're doing this time. And I actually have the page open of all the different books in the Company Wars series. There's seven books in this series, and I've read Down Below Station before, and Rim Runners, and Heavy Time. In fact, I think I've pretty much read all of them. Let me put it that way. Seven books.
When was that?
This was in the 90s. I think a lot of these books came out in the 80s, and when I started getting into science fiction, reading around, 94, when I could go to the library, and they didn't actually have a science fiction section. They had all of the science fiction and fantasy books spread out just through the normal fiction section.
Oh, no, you had to find them.
Yeah, so I had to find them. And the way that I'd find them was just go, literally pull a book out of the shelf. Does it have a dragon or a spaceship on the front? Yes, I'll read it. If not, no, I'd just put it back in and keep pulling them out. And some of them I'd be like, is that historical fiction or is it a fantasy? You know, I'd have to start looking and working it out. So that was pretty much, and I just did that over and over, pretty much starting at A, like with Piers Anthony and those kind of books, all the way through to David Zindel, which was Z. You know, I just went through the entire library and read every single science fiction, fantasy, and book that I could read or I could find. I'm sure I missed lots.
Yeah.
And there's some which were kind of on the edge of science fiction or fantasy, or is it really, or what kind of, is it a techno thrill or whatever kind of stuff there is. And this series was one of those books, and I really enjoyed a lot of these books.
I had some funny phases in my childhood. There were some phases where I read lots of vampire books, and some phases where I read detective stories, and then
crime fiction,
phases where I read books about. It was some weird introduction to computer science for kids.
All right.
Yeah, it was like.
How to program with BASIC.
Fiction.
Oh, fiction stuff.
Fiction, but including the idea of like hacking and programming.
Oh, right.
But using it in an adventure story.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that stuff like that.
Yeah, I know.
So
you went through phases of cycles of that kind of stuff.
Different kind of things. And then I would like obsessively read certain authors or certain things. And
well, I think that's what happened with me and C.J. Sherry, because I found one book and, you know, you just keep going in that thing and then you'd be like, this is in the Company Wars, but I think I started off with, I know there's Hellburner and Heavy Time are these like very much kind of like space battle based things, but there's only very few space battles. It's mostly about, you know, interpersonal politics and stuff on a spaceship with soldiers on it, and they get into their craft and they go off and fight the enemy and come back, but that only happens like maybe once at the start in a reference somewhere, and then you get into battle, and the rest of the book is just sort of like these intense like political maneuverings and discussions and different things between different groups of people and individuals on the ship, and I really enjoyed all that kind of stuff. I read a quote which was sort of like, she makes the conversation or like an argument between two people as intense as a space battle. And you actually read some of those space battles and you're like, actually the argument, like maybe it's because she doesn't.
The arguments are better.
Well, it's maybe because she doesn't write space battles very well. I'm not sure. Anyway, so it came down to this. I reread some of these. Or I think I only read Down Below Station again. And it was the last book that I ever read, last science fiction book that I ever read before I started the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast.
So
at the end of 2007, I read Down Below Station.
Again, well, you have.
I'd read it before, and I read it again. I read it in probably like 97 or something like that. Read it again in 2007, and now read it again in 2018 or something like that. So it's been 10 years apart of some of these reads.
That's a fun time span.
Good time span. And one of the reasons I was reading this is because I was going back and looking at some of those earlier books, you know, and I saw the first book was by. One of the early books that I reviewed and really liked was by Verna Vinge. Another book, the first book I ever reviewed was by Joan D. Vinge. And so I looked at her stuff again, and there's The Snow Queen, which was a Hugo Award-winning book. And I was like, oh, that's one of the few Hugo Award-winning books that I've not reviewed in the 10 years of doing this. Okay. I've done all the Hugulas, all the Hugo and Nebula Award-winning books. And I was like, all right, let's just tick off some of these. So I read The Snow Queen, and then there's this, The Company Wars series, the first book in that, Down Below Station, even though some of the later books are set before it. You know, it's a strange... Yeah, it's sort of like, oh, let's go back, and it was an interesting thing that happened. So I thought I would read it again, and because I had good memories of this, and I think this is a book, there was a few books before I started this book review podcast that I kind of enjoyed so much or had strong opinions about so much that I wanted to talk to about people, and I realized I don't have people to talk about in my life that much who are reading the same books as me. Let's start a podcast, and this was before Goodreads exist and all these other kind of things. There wasn't the same social network, but
feedback via emails and stuff.
Yeah, and also just there was a few reasons I started the podcast. One was to keep track of the books I read. It was like, oh, did I read this book already? There's only so many times you can pick up an Alistair Reynolds book with the same. They all have the same cover design back in the day, with a planet, with a spaceship silhouetted in the planet. Mm. And I'd buy it and read the first chapter and went, I've literally read this book, the first chapter of this book, three times now, and the last two times I read it, I realised that I'd read the whole book before and then put it back on the shelf or something like that. So that kind of thing happens. Anyway, so Down Below Station. Unfortunately, now, I think that my opinion of the book in December of 2007, which I was like, oh, let me do a test review or whatever I did. There was a few books that I did test reviews of science fiction book review podcast episodes. And I'm not sure if I did this one. And it wasn't very strong in my head. So I recommended it to you, remembering I really enjoyed this book.
Yeah.
And this time it just didn't grab me the same way that it did the two previous times I read it.
Right.
And I'm not sure why it didn't. Mainly it's because you started reading it and didn't quite get into it. And then And that kind of reflects on me. And then I start picking up and I was like, yeah, is this actually a good book, or am I just enjoying because of nostalgia reasons? Because I enjoyed it when I was like 15 years old. Like it, all these different things, you know, these different things come back into my head. And I think one of the things is because when I first read it, I was coming off the back of these other books. So I was in the world. Like they're talking about the different merchant families and the different union and the company and stuff. Like, because I was more in it, you know. Yeah. It feels like a second season of a TV show, maybe. Well, not a second season of a TV show.
It certainly doesn't feel like a first book of a thing. Like,
no.
It is very much like okay, here's some background, and now we get into political action, and there's so many factions and things going on. It's just a bit tedious.
Well, that's the thing. It starts off with the backstory, and it is one of those future history things that's sort of like, right, in 300 years' time, the humans have spread out, and they've spread out in this way, you know, and they've sent out colony ships, and then they sent out merchant ships, and then they sent out military ships, you know, like there's different waves of different things going out.
Of course.
And there's this great line, I can't remember what it is, it's one in the very much later Dune series books, which is not very good books in that end of the series. But one thing I enjoyed about it, or maybe it was in one of the Dune prequel books written by Kevin J. Anderson or whatever it was.
Oh, okay.
Really not good books. But again, I read all of those when they were coming out because I would go to the bookshop and just every new science fiction book that was there, I would just buy it from Waterstones or something like that. Not every new science fiction book. But you know, Dune, it's Dune. Why not read more Dune? I've read all the Dunes. Anyway,
you want more of the story.
But there's one of the lines in there, which is, if you have a single point, and then you create a sphere around that single point, the sphere will always be bigger than the central point.
Of course.
And it's one of the things like, yeah, of course. But that's what happens with expansion into the star systems. Like, Earth is based there. But as soon as you have a network going out with three nodes attached to each other, Earth is just a point in the middle, or maybe on one end.
Yeah,
if you expand in one direction, and that's what happens in this book. We expand so much in one direction that the political tethers back to Earth are
tiny.
Like it's very tenuous links back to Earth.
Also, I think the biggest point about this is that sure, the people start on Earth.
Yeah.
But from generation to generation, there's less connection.
No connection at all.
Because why would you fight for something that you don't even know? You've not even been on. And you can't call it your mother planet if you've never even been on that planet.
Yeah, it's sort of like the cradle of evolution, but that's all it is in the end. Yeah. So this book is one of those kind of things where there is the Union, which is, I mean, it's kind of a retelling of the colonization of North America, and then like the Declaration of Independence. You know, it's one of those kind of things where you have this idealized thing out there, and then the Company War is kind of like the East India Company. I mean, I'm not sure if this is actually in the head of C.J. Cherry when she was writing this, but the company is like the East India Company, which is sometimes kind of, it was like the official way that Britain took over India and these other things, but then they were in a war against, they were allied with like the French or something against Britain at one point, and it was like a British company, but they had their own army, they had their own ships, and all of that time, like in the War of Independence in America, they were like the East India Company is
for the British.
Is you'd think they'd be fighting for the British, but actually they were going to join with America fighting against the British crown, even though they were a British company, which is why the United States flag now with the 13 stripes and the thing on the side, and Hawaii's flag is still based after the British, the East India Company, the British East India Company,
the design
of it with the 13 stripes with the Union Jack in the corner was the East India Company's flag, and then when the United States became independent, I think there's even one of the things with, you know, one of those guys, George Washington, say, oh, if we're gonna have a flag, why not just use the flag like that we want to use and to get in with these. I can't remember all the policies, but I looked it up on Wikipedia the other day, didn't I show it to you?
I remember,
And this is the reason, because I was thinking, is this, and again, I should actually look on Wikipedia to see, is this kind of a retelling of that with a company going back, you know, like a company which is based in Britain, Earth, in this book, you know, with America and the Union, and they're going to get out, you know, all that different kind of stuff. So it's there's all of these different kind of things going on there. The idea of colonial governments throwing off the independence of this tenuous link back to the homeland.
I think it's very difficult to not see the connection, to like say, oh, this is something totally different, because turns out humans can't really change in those matters.
Yeah.
So if we do have any people going to Mars at some point, there will be some sort of colonial development in this kind of way.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, of course. There's always going to be that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm just looking on the Wikipedia page, and there's a plot summary, but there doesn't seem to be any... you know, maybe I'm probably not the only person to recognise this, but it seems to be it's an influence of that. You know, like a lot of these military science fiction books are pretty much just sort of Napoleonic Wars, but with spaceships instead of
a war movie.
It's the spaceships, you know. Yes. Like you have this all of these ones. It's sort of like, oh, and you have to do these broadsides and swing around here and do all that. And you're kind of like, you're just doing naval battles, but trying to make it into a 3D thing, into a 2D thing.
Yeah.
All of those. I can't remember the names.
In the end, it's just war and the same strategies and ideas.
Yes, but I'm saying that as those books are a retelling of Napoleonic War sea battles, you know, and the Horatio Hornblower kind of stuff, you know, Vorkosigan saga is a lot of that kind of you're going off into space and doing this kind of stuff. It's just like, just pirate adventures and sea adventures, but let's just do it in space. Yeah. This feels to be like, oh, this is colonial War of Independence, but... The thing is, we've talked about all this, that all happens like just before this book starts. Yeah. Some of the other books in this series actually take place during that war, the Company Wars. Or put it this way, those take place in the War of Independence kind of area where the Union splits apart from Earth.
Because it felt to me up until that point, until I read, it felt to me like they were actually just starting to get into a new war.
This is the whole point. This is a book about the aftermath of one of the battles that you read about in these other books, which are these big battles, space battles and stuff.
Yeah.
This is the book of where, all that's happened, everyone's won, now there's all these, like, leftover factions. Like, what happens when, say, in, I don't know, Iraq, the war is won, then what happens? You've got this whole messy system of, like, all right, you've got the Sunnis here, and the Shiites here, and then you've got the Kurds up in the north, and they've all got these different factions, and they're all trying to work out, and then you've got the, you know, you have the companies coming in, the mercenaries coming in, leftover American forces, and you've got all this kind of stuff. It's very much about the aftermath of the war, so it's very messy. It's about the people who are hiding in tunnels. It's about the people who are, you know... have a bad history and they're trying to get out of that history,
like,
in the war.
Double spies and double agents.
And there's this guy who used to be on one side, but then he's had his brain wiped and is, you know, he's trying to get a new personality and put it together. And then does he still have, like, what side is he on? Is he still a Union person?
Not quite clear.
Union is this outer planets over there. Oh, the idea being that down below station is a Pell station. is a station above a planet, and the planet is called Down Below, or Pell, the planet
the
Pell. But Down Below Station is the one down on the planet, and Pell Station is the one in orbit. So, so this was the first planet that was found with life on it. So it was sort of like, great, we're going to expand in this direction. This can be a trading post, and we can grow food down there, and all that kind of stuff. But then when they started finding more and more planets further on than that, Pell Station is the last link back to Earth. And so this is a nexus point. This is the this is the point. This is like the trading outpost plus the military outpost. It's like Singapore is what it is. Like, you know, all the trade goes around this way and all the trade goes around back around the other way.
Yeah.
And at the start of Second World War, the Japanese come in and go, right, we're taking over this place. And all the British people left there like, you know, so nowhere.
Mostly because of the geographical place, it becomes the neuralgic point.
Yeah, it's like Gibraltar or the Suez Canal or, you know, one of those tight places, you know, the Bosphorus Strait. It's sort of like, oh, everything comes through here. But it isn't, because you can go around it, but it is like the trading station. Yeah, and this book just follows the different people on there. I'm not really sure what to say about it. You know, they get into things happen and other people come and take over and there's battles and stuff out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what the book is really. And as that book, it's really good. Like I really like all the economics. I like all the trade stuff. I like all the military stuff. It feels real to me, the story. But it also feels a little bit too much just like history, like little samples of stuff from a period of history. And if you're not into that history, you're not going to get through it. And to be honest, the middle of this book really started dragging for me.
Shall we tell the people that I got 40% into
the
book?
You're 45% of the way into the book or something. You didn't carry on.
No. The problem with all of this that you just said, that you really like, you know, you like the spaceship wars and politics and stuff and the history. You really like this stuff.
No, I'm saying if you do like that, it can grab hold of you.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is that because I read it before, none of it was new to me and I kind of knew how it was going to end anyway.
But I particularly don't like either of those things.
No.
Not really. I mean, I like crime stories and stuff.
There's no crime stories in this.
Not really. And there was this one story arc that I actually quite enjoyed, but then
which story arc was that?
With the two natives, the Pell natives.
Bluetooth and
Velvet.
Crystal. Velvet. Yeah.
Is it Velvet?
Yeah. Maybe Velvet and Bluetooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
On down below, so just to back to that, on Down Below Station, there's these little like Care Bear aliens, furry aliens. I just saw someone mention it on Goodreads as I was looking through to find some names.
Yeah, they reminded me a little bit of those what's his in Star Wars? Those little furry guys,
Ewoks.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of like bit like taller, skinny Ewoks.
A little bit, a little bit taller and more like in their faces, not quite as furry, but more detailed. Like,
yeah, maybe.
More like detailed faces for some reason. I don't even know.
So Care Bear Ewoks, yes.
Yeah. So that was kind of what I liked. And otherwise, I was just so confusing. And all those different... There was these different families and it was all divided. Like the whole working like things was like is in pretty much like in medieval cities, you had the guilds and this guild and then that guild and then these guys.
Yeah, I saw someone on the Goodreads mention it is a bit like Game of Thrones in space. You know, there's all these different factions and different people trying to take over and these different people have different armies and then the armies mix and the armies spread apart and all that kind of stuff.
I don't like that either. So, but anyway, it was like, and then once, like the bits that I liked...
Yeah,
and then now that I just came to this middle part there, and it goes away to somewhere where I don't really care.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is one of the things that I remember, because I've read all these books before. When I was reading this book, I actually had like three different novels in mind, but they were all the same book. I thought this was the one about the people who go down onto the planet and, you know, they take the, you know, they round up some of the people who are being persecuted and they bring people down from the prison ward on the ship.
Yeah.
And then they go off and they go into the wilderness and they set up like some new outposts with the alien, you know, with the natives out there, and they do all of that kind of stuff. And I remember that being an entire novel story.
It's not.
But it wasn't. It's sort of like one part of each chapter in this book.
Tiny, like it's a little like part of this. Breadcrumbs every now and then.
And then there's another book which is about the guy on the station who is like gets set up as a figurehead politician. They're like, hey, we need a leader.
Yeah.
You used to be this counselor in this different ward. Come here. You can be now be the figurehead. And he realizes, oh no, I've become a figurehead of a criminal organization which just needs a legitimate face to it. Yeah. And there was all that, and I was like, oh, I remember. Oh, that's the same novel as the one of the things downstairs. And then there's Mallory, who's this thing with the spaceship called Norway.
Yeah.
All the spaceships have got different names. There's Europe and Australia and Norway and France or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Norway, and I was like, oh, that's this novel as well. And there was like literally four different things that I didn't realize were all in this book.
Yes.
And it's all in there. It's sort of like five different novels all put together, but not satisfyingly complete novels. It's sort of like four novellas, like stitched together, but then by the time you read through some chapters of the other ones, then you go back to the first one again and go, right, what's happened since now?
Yeah.
You know,
and that was, I think, to me, the most confusing thing, because this wasn't a book that I just read through continuously. I had breaks in between.
You have to read it, I think.
And otherwise, I just got totally confused. Where are we now? Who is this now? And because it jumps so much between those five books, basically.
Yeah.
It was just so confusing, and it was hard work for me to get through it.
Yeah.
So I now just stopped.
Well, I listened to this as an audiobook, and I read it for a while, pretty continuously, and then I stopped because I was getting through it too quickly, and then I was like, let's wait for Yulian. Again, wait for Yulian. I should always just only start a book when you're on the last two chapters, and then we can catch up with each other in this way. That should be how I do it, but I didn't, and again, I stopped for a while, and then I went back to it a bit, and then I stopped for a while, and I kept coming back to it. But again, I think the only reason I could do that is because I did know what's good, because I have read it twice before, and even though one time it was 20 years ago and the other time was 10 years ago,
but
it's still
familiar to you.
Well, not so much the name, just the situations.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, these are this group of people, and then I remember the names and can carry on. But some of them then change the names as they go through. There's, you know, there's some name changing, and then people take on fake names as well. It gets a little bit confusing in the middle there. The middle of this book did feel a bit too much like, oh, we've got these four or five different stories going on. Let's just check in with them all for a while. And there's this kind of passage of time kind of thing going on. Like, one person's pregnant at the start of the book, and they're, like, by the end of the book, they're, like, not totally, they're not, like, about to give birth, but they're very, very pregnant. So you realize, oh, the entire span of this book is probably, like, 7 months or something.
All right.
It doesn't read like that because the writing is so brisk. The writing is just sort of like, this happens, and then this happens. And often...
It felt like it was all happening at the same time.
It's spread out quite a lot. Yeah, that's the whole thing. There's sort of like long periods. You're like, oh, we've been waiting around for weeks for this thing. And I was like, but
that doesn't feel like a week.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So there's this difference between like each individual scene being very brief and compressed down and being like lots of stuff happening in one scene, but it all happening within one conversation or one meeting or one small event. And then they'll go, right, let's go do this. And you'll read the next chapter and it'll be somewhere else. Next chapter somewhere else. Next chapter somewhere else. And then you come back to that first one and they've done everything that they said they were going to do.
Yeah.
And now it's like a month later and they're dealing with the fallout from that kind of thing. So yeah, it's very dense of what you're getting, but then kind of a bit spread out of what you actually see happening in terms of action.
Yes. And sometimes I think, like, of course, authors trying to do this, like, it's a bit like, probably they have it like in the movie, they cut between scenes and they cut between action and stuff to make it more interesting. Yeah. But sometimes I wish they would just focus on one thing and keep with it longer so it can actually...
That's a real balancing act in movies.
Difficult.
Especially when you get to the action sequence. You know, we're just watching the, Thanos movie, Infinity War, Avengers movie. Thanos was the first one I mentioned that one for some reason. At the end there's sort of like four different battles going on. Oh, there's two, like three things going on down on Earth and then two things going on in space or whatever like that.
Yeah.
All that, like, and swapping between those... It's really difficult to do that and to find that balance.
Yeah.
And unfortunately with Infinity War, they're like, oh, let's have a big battle at the end. Because you always have to have a big battle at the end.
You don't.
And you know who proves that? CJ Sherry, who understands, actually, we don't need to spend all the time in the battle. The battle can go, right, we're going to go and have a battle over there. And all the spaceships go off and they just deal with what's left. Deal with the actual story that's left behind.
But on the other hand, that is very hard to make interesting and...
Yeah.
Especially, like, for me. For a person like me, it's really, really tricky to read about this politics shit. Sorry. it's like it's like so. I mean, this is what it is. I know it is boring and tedious and
what is boring and tedious? Politics.
Politics.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
There's ways of making it more interesting, though, I guess.
In fiction, yes.
Yeah, in TV.
Anyway, but this is so, like, doing the aftermath, like, writing a book about aftermath of conflict,
yeah,
is hard.
And this is a hard book. And I think if you're looking for that, character studies of lots of people living in a grey area, like, there's no one in this book where you're like, actually, this is a lie. There are some characters in this book which I guess you identify with because they're the most morally unambiguous. The morally unambiguous characters are the ones who are just good because their family is good. The Constantines, you know.
Yeah, but I never knew was this real? Like, were they actually just
It turns good? Out, maybe, but they're a little bit too much aristocracy, leftover aristocracy, yeah. Slavers, maybe. I know, it's like, one of those weird things. That there are some characters where you're like, okay, this person is innocent, or at least, you know, morally good, and there's a lot of grey areas. Like, even there's only, like, one or two people who you're like, all right, this is a bad guy. This guy needs to be dealt with. But a lot of the times you're like, right, there's three different factions here and they're all on different sides of this war.
Yeah.
And who am I meant to be rooting for again?
Yeah.
And that is really difficult to pull off. I think this book does a good job of doing that.
Well, until 40% in, I have no idea who's the bad person.
Exactly.
I have no idea. Like, there was this one guy who took care of this guy in the hospital?
Yeah.
I don't know. Was the guy in the hospital a good person?
Exactly.
I have no clue.
All the time, because you're seeing it from all different sides of the of the conflict. I'm not saying conflict as war, but like whatever political conflict it is, it's because it's ambiguous in that way. It there isn't just a clear person or character that you just meant to latch onto as the main character and you root for them all the way through.
Yeah.
Except for maybe the Constantines, but then they seem to be only the good guys because they are determined to be the good guys because they are the good guys. You know, it feels
a bit... Yeah, they see that the other people are doing worse things, so they try to do the opposite?
I'm not sure if that's what I'm trying to say. I think what I'm trying to say is, in the book Dune, there's the Harkonnens, who are the bad guys, and there's the Atreides, who are the good guys.
Yeah.
And they are that way because they are that way. Like, that is what they are. They're the two different sides of this. And what that makes that morally ambiguous is that, in the end, the Kwisatz Haderach, which is Paul Atreides, takes over and slaughters millions of people across different things, and it's sort of like, oh right, so the guy who becomes the totalitarian dictator at the end of the book is from the good family,
but still is then
what,
like, slaughtering people?
Yeah, exactly.
Again,
there is a lot of ambiguity in there, but you think it's going to be like, oh, he's the hero, and that's some of the issues that I have with some readings of Dune or like the movie versions or something. At the end, it's sort of like, yay, and he's the hero and he's great, and it's sort of like, wait, no, this is going to start off a new what do they call it, the jihad.
Yeah.
It's a new jihad that gets separated off and they slaughter millions, whatever it is. Anyway, later books deal with that kind of outfall. But in this book, it seems to be that, like, oh, right, it's like in the Game of Thrones, you've got the House Stark, and the House Stark are good because they're the good guys.
All right.
And they're the honourable guys. And it might not always go well for them, but they're the good guys because they're the good guys, and the other ones are the bad guys because they're the bad guys. And it feels a bit like, oh, that's a bit easy in some ways. Like,
right.
Why are the Constantines so good? Why do the alien creatures love the natives of...
Yeah,
of,
you keep saying aliens.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, the non-human characters, they love them because, oh, Constantine man, you're the one that we're going to live for and die for and stuff.
Yeah,
and I was like,
we go to your grave and...
But, like, is it just because he's, like, mildly... Is it because he's a good slaveholder, or he's a good master, or is it because he's actually a good person or something like that? Yeah,
that's
so
really tricky to answer.
Exactly. And that's why I think this book is difficult to get into, because you don't have a character that you just follow through the story like you can in other books. There's no, like, child character who you see the eyes through and stuff like that.
It's always so tricky when I talk to you about these books. I feel like I'm such a reader. I just want to enjoy reading.
It's fine. There are lots of books which are just enjoyable to read.
Because the time that I do have now is limited, more limited than...
And sometimes you just want to read a Peter F. Hamilton space opera and have space battles and aliens.
I just went back to reading a German, like a translation
in German,
from Anne Perry about one of her historical detective stories. Yeah, and it's just something I just literally run through. I read it and I'm in it, and then I'm done. It's nice, and I enjoy that. And I think when I read books like the down below station, I think, oh, maybe I should be a bit more...
It's okay.
Into challenging
no,
books.
It's not. I don't think it's challenging in a way which is enjoyable challenging in the end. I think this book in the end is sort of like maybe for the time it was sort of groundbreaking to do science fiction with this much gray area and ambiguity, yeah, moral ambiguity. Yeah. But now that's been done so much that you yeah. read stories where you go, oh, there isn't. I mean, when was this book written in 1981 or something? Let's have a quick look here on Wikipedia. Yeah. 1981 this was released, so maybe at the time it was a bit more groundbreaking, but now it just feels like morally ambiguous has been like that's been the catchword
done
since
somehow?
Well, maybe not even done better,
like
but
me,
just
yeah.
it's just matured, like sometimes the first version of a story or the first trope that like the first version of the trope that comes along which is successful and wins Hugo Awards or whatever like that it is groundbreaking in a way which is you can't compete with it. But then there's others which are groundbreaking in a way which other people then go, ah, we can do this better.
Yeah.
And then they do it better. In the same way that now, what's the example I heard recently? Well, not recently. It was, we watched Ghost in the Shell.
Yes.
Not the recent one, but the original Ghost in the Shell movie.
Yeah.
And then you watch The Matrix.
The anime,
yeah. But then after watching The Matrix, but if you watch The Matrix and then watch Ghost in the Shell, you're like, oh, but this was done in The Matrix, like this same scene. And you're like, oh, this is what The Matrix was copying or referencing or just taking, like there's like the whole scenes of them like standing behind pillars, all that stuff. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before because it's such a great example. And then you look at that original movie and you're like, okay, I see what they're going for. But The Matrix did this same kind of thing in a way which now The Matrix is the cyberpunk
point of reference.
Yeah, point of reference.
Yeah.
And the original document or the original document, which you go back to, is no longer that. Although in this case, that's probably still, for movies, is still, Blade Runner. Is still what so many of those movies are referencing.
Yeah.
And I guess that does hold up some kind of...
But also it is still necessary that it was there because otherwise the other movie and the other stories would not have been possible like that.
Yeah.
So it is important to have this first glimpse and step, whatever.
Yeah, well, let's just have a quick look at Game of Thrones because this is similar to Game of Thrones. Where did Game of Thrones come in? It's a... not Game of Thrones. What can we do? A Song of... The first novel... Yeah, so the first Game of Thrones novel came out in 1996. So if you're actually thinking about this kind of like this style of storytelling where it's kind of like you've got one
factions
good family and all these different factions like that. I'm not saying Game of Thrones wouldn't exist because unless Down Below Station exists, but it does feel like an early kind of like an early version of that, which probably won a Hugo Award because it was so like, oh, let's do future history in an ambiguous like a fallout of a war, like, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not sure, but again, because I wasn't reading this book in 1981. I was reading it in 1997 or whatever.
As a what old?
Like 16, 17 or 50. I don't know. I don't even know. Because I like I say, I read all these books between 13 and 18.
And at that point, you don't question things.
No, I was just reading it. It's just like, oh, more science fiction. Just shove it into my eyes. You know, that's all I'm thinking.
Of course.
Into my brain. Let's get all this stuff in there. Let's have some space battles and have some fun... you know, kick-ass female captains, which I'm like, oh, this is good. When I read that back then, I didn't even realise that C.J. Sherry was even a woman. And the reason why she changed her name was because sticking H on the end of cherry makes it less feminine.
Yeah, it's like less like a cherry.
Yeah, it's not just like C.J. Cherry. You're like, oh, that's a woman. C.J. Cherry, just stick a H on the end. You're like, oh, that's interesting. It sounds like a foreign name or something like that. Maybe I'll just click on her. Cherry, pronounced Cherry, Carolyn Janice Cherry, appended the silent H to her real name because her first editor, Donald A. Volheim, felt that Cherry sounded too much like a romance writer. Her initials CJ were used to disguise the fact she was female at a time when almost all science fiction authors were male. So, yeah. It worked on me when I was 14.
I don't want to say it doesn't feel like a book written by a woman, but it certainly, like... It,
No, I think it did. I mean, I'm not going to say it does or it doesn't, but again, 14-year-old Luke didn't notice, like, or didn't, like, didn't make the connection. But even then, right. I did a whole episode on P.J. James with Children for Men. Never worked out she was a woman because I'd never read anything by her. Never.
That's good. That's how it should be.
Well, it could be how it should be. I reckon right. if every author never put their photo on the book and only ever went by an initial and a second name, great.
Would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Be great. No problem. I'd have no problem with that. Anyway, there's this great review that I just found on when I was just scrolling through Goodreads here. It's sort of like it's a 5-star review. I'm not going to review this book 5 stars, but what I like this here goes, here's how your typical sci-fi author writes. I took my iPhone from my pocket. The liquid crystal display lit up under the adhesive film screen protector. I pressed an icon on the screen and the pressure-sensitive display responded by bringing up a composition screen. I quickly typed out a message using the keyboard that appeared on the screen, then hit the send icon. The phone immediately transmitted the message to a nearby radio tower using the SMS protocol, which then sent the message through to the global compute network to...
That's great.
Now here's how Cherry would write that scene. I texted my sister, "Want to meet up for dinner?" ? That's it. That's the same scene. That's the same scene.
Yeah.
And this is so clear to me. The reason why I think, even if the theme and the exploration of what this book is maybe doesn't hold up or is feels a bit dated to be like such a version of this version that we're saying why it didn't grab us.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's old. One thing that really holds up as a book written in 1981 in that it isn't about how the starship drives work and it isn't about the computer systems and how they work. Actually, there is a plot point about that, but it's sort of like, oh yeah, I can get this computer going. I know the codes. And they just, you know, they fix the codes or something like that and they get locked out of the system. But it's not like he went to the thing. There's a little bit of like, oh, we record it on a tape or something. But tapes are always one of those things in science fiction.
Can be anything.
It can be anything. A tape is just a book or a hard drive or a spinning disc or a floppy drive or whatever it is, just something to hold data on.
Yes.
And back in the 1960s and 70s it was tapes and then it became discs and then it became drives and now it becomes just memory or storage or whatever it is like that. So
it wasn't fiddly about things.
No, it wasn't. It's sort of like, we've got to get through this airlock and they go through it. It's not like, oh, you got to do the handprint thing here. They lock the door. It's sort of like they're using technology, and that's one of the things that I actually do like about this book is that it isn't dated because of the technology, except in the references to tapes and screens.
I didn't notice.
No, you don't notice because it isn't there. Like I say, it's about the people.
It's way more about what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever even a description of a spaceship. There isn't a description of how the star drivers work. There is a little bit about breathers and some radio equipment down on the planet. But apart from that, even not that very much, you know.
No, the only thing was that, like, okay, they have masks. The people who go down have masks. And the people who go up, then, like the natives, then have masks on the stations.
Yeah.
But that's basically like all that went down. And then there's this one guy who was there with some kind of envoys, like some sort of ambassador.
Yeah.
And he just describes the room. But it just felt like, okay,
they describe where people are sitting in the room more than they describe the technology that's used to have the conversation in the room or whatever.
It was never about, I get to put on my... all the time in my face, I am on a spaceship in space in the future.
There's never a discussion about how the spaceship drives work, like how fast can they get from one place to the other. It's just assumed, oh, it takes a long time to do this, and they go out and they come back and time has passed or whatever it is.
Yes.
Or time passes maybe with this different, whatever. Again, but that's not the focus of it. And I do think that's a strength of the book, that you can read it now and it doesn't feel dated in that way.
It totally
does. A lot of 1980s, especially 90s, feels almost the most dated... decade for me in terms of science fiction when I read a book from the 90s, because computers and the internet are just starting and it's one of those things that are like, oh, people are connected and we can send messages instantly and there's some of these books where like, oh, the biggest day in the world occurred when there was no such thing as a long distance phone call anymore. Every phone call to every phone in the world cost exactly the same amount of money. It didn't matter if you were calling the other side of the world or someone next door, it was all the same amount of money. And you're reading that and going, all right, so Skype exists. Or, well, you know, it's one of those kind of things. You're just like, all right. You saw what was going to be totally banal, totally boring to the future world, that you can literally have the Skype name or, you know, email address or, you know, whatever you get. Like people on sending someone a voice message on Facebook. Like it's so... I know, to say boring. Not even boring now, but just so...
But you don't think about it anymore.
You don't think about it.
Whenever I want to send somebody a text... I'm not selecting, am I sending it to their phone number or am I sending it to their email or am I sending it to whatever?
You just find their name.
I just find their name. But this is not, however it does
it. The idea now that just imagine how much it costs to send a text. I mean, it, actually SMS was like that until recently. You know, you use your phone in a different country. So you still have a little bit of that. But the idea being that in this, I can't even remember which science fiction book it was, but I'm sure it was from the 90s. It must have been from the 90s because this was, it would have been at this time. Maybe the 80s. I don't know. No, actually, you know what? I think that's Contact. By Carl Sagan. I think that's one of the plot points in that book.
I only know the movie.
Yeah, well, of course it's not in the movie. So when was Contact? Let me just type in this. Sorry if you can hear my thing here. So Contact was 1985. Oh, okay. So maybe that's a bit... Maybe I'm not remembering the book. But it is one of those things that as I was reading it, I was like, yeah, okay.
Great. Yeah. No, this is totally not Down Below Station.
No.
This is
other issues with Down Below Station.
But it's just, I just think it's, some of the book I quite enjoyed, but I think the overall story of the book or the overall theme of the book is just not for me.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of these reviews here. Slow burn military space opera with awesome ladies who are competent and complicated, arrogant dudes who pay and pay and pay. And also a cinnamon roll. What? Okay. I don't get the references. Anyway, so I don't really think I've got much to say about this. 3.91 rating on Goodreads in total.
Yeah.
And among my friends, 3.5 average rating. I'm not even going to give it that higher rating.
It's quite telling that none of us made any notes to it.
Well, no, I mean... Oh, I do have some notes.
Oh, you do?
In my head.
In
not notes,
head.
But
oh,
things
right.
I remembered I wanted to say. I think right. I've mentioned
did
most
you, did
of them.
Did you say all of them?
The audiobook narrator, not very good.
Oh, that's a pity.
He had not any, kind of like a very plain delivery, not very exciting. He had one woman's voice, which was just talking a bit louder. And unfortunately, then the aliens talked a bit like this, and then the women talk a bit like this. I was like, don't look, if you're not going to do different voices for different characters, don't just put on a falsetto voice or a higher voice for women. Because if you're going to have different characters for everyone and you're good at character voices, do that. Go for it. Put on the different voices.
If not, just read
the book. And I don't mind it, because if the book is well enough written, you know who's talking.
Yeah.
And it is well enough written because it's a whole book about people talking to each other and sitting in rooms and talking to each other.
Yes.
Narrated by Brian Troxell. Just not great narration. Not bad, but it's one of those things that every time I heard a woman character, and there's quite a few women characters in here, they do quite a bit. They're, you know... And they start talking, they just got to do this. And all the women, and because he's doing this higher voice, it sounds like they're all shouting all the time.
Mm.
And in my head, and the way that I've read this book before, Mallory, the commander of Norway, she is very competent and controlled and everyone just follows her.
Yeah.
But if she was using the same shrill, half-shouting voice that she uses with this narrator... men just won't follow a woman who's shouting and shrill all the time.
Yeah, that's,
and it's sort of like,
that's often
just use the competent commander voice.
Yeah,
you know,
that's also often why people, women politicians, so much would need a vocal coach, because they have these super annoying voices and they have to have these speeches an hour long. And if you keep listening to annoying voices like that, you're just not going to listen. That's just what happens.
Yeah.
And in general, guys just have not, like, just by the way that it's set up in physics, it's just lower and more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And
men have ambient music voices as well.
Like,
blum, blum,
not
blum,
all
blum,
of them.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
There are people out there with
just,
very nasty
you say,
voices.
On average, men's voices who talk like that are just slightly more pleasant.
Pleasant to listen to.
Just as a pitch of
exactly,
voice.
Exactly. This is why so many women try to have a lower voice. Because
oh, really? How low is your voice, Juliana?
My voice often sounds lower than I actually would want it.
Really?
Yes. Often when
but you're a soprano.
Yeah, but when I'm talking, often my voice sounds like I'm putting on a lower voice or like...
For me, it's the opposite. Sometimes I listen to my voice and I'm like, oh, this...
Yeah.
You know, I was editing that vlog and I was like, oh, can I edit out that way? Hey, guys!
Yeah. I sometimes am so embarrassed by the way
I don't say, hey, guys.
You do.
I don't think I've ever said... I never address the... In my vlog, I never address the audience. Hey, guys, we're going to do this.
I know. No, you don't do that.
Because that's so much of a vlogger thing. Hey, guys, tell me what you think in the comments and stuff like that, you know. Hey, guys, how you doing? You know.
Nobody,
catch you next time.
You don't care. That's not like...
Yeah, it's because I don't do vlogs for my audience. No, that's a weird thing to say. Hey, guys. No, I never address the vlog to the people watching. I always address it... Like, if I'm talking to you, I address it to you, or I talk to the camera.
Yeah.
I never presume that my audience is, hey, guys. And in this podcast as well, I don't do that. I always say, you, the listener. I don't know. It's just a thing that I've picked up, and I think I don't want to address people as, hey, guys. Anyway, what else do I need to say?
A rating?
audibletrial.com/SFBIP. Oh, don't get this book, get a different one. What else have I got here to listen to? Red Mars, Kim Stanley Robinson. That's a book that's coming up in the future.
Yeah, shall I read it?
It is a foundational science fiction novel.
So I should read it just to get all the references?
If you read this book, it will be an education in science fiction in a
all
way.
All right.
It'll probably be available in a library. And I think I actually have a PDF version of it somewhere.
Sure.
Let me just do a search.
The Mars Chronicles by Red Bradbury. Nope. Is not that.
No, you're looking for Red Mars.
Red Mars.
Oh, I thought I was going to have
I thought I had it somewhere.
Okay, I might have it on a hard drive, actually, because I realised my ebooks and audiobooks folder is empty, except for some E&M banks. So I'll check it on a hard drive, because I know I've probably got a PDF version. Anyway, I got the audiobook. That is another kind of future... Not future history. It's not a war book, and it's not politics. There is politics. Anyway, I think you might enjoy it. So if you start reading it and get into it, yeah, I'll start listening to the audiobook. Okay. Anyway,
Maybe it is in the library.
So if you want to go to audibletrial.com/SFBIP, check out Red Mars. It's foundational science fiction, and we will review it probably in 2 months when Juliana finishes it. Get to the final few chapters, and then I'll start the audiobook.
Yeah, I will tell you.
I think it's quite a chunky book, actually.
I'm 2 hours, 35 minutes into finishing the 3.2
Anyway, let's get back to a book that we're reviewing this episode. Let me put it this way. Down Below Station. You didn't finish this book, so you can't really give it a rating.
Not really.
No, because it wasn't the book that you hoped it to be, and no, you can't really judge the book on what it is if you don't finish it. I don't think so.
Not really. No.
So here's the thing for me. I think the first 4 or 5 hours of this book, I really enjoyed because it's kind of the setup. Yeah. The next few hours, great. And then there's like 6 hour section in the middle, which is just sort of like, we're over here, now 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 over here. And now back to the first place. And it just keeps going around a few too many times with not enough happening on screen or on the page. A lot of stuff is happening in the background, but we go back there and this major earth-shaking thing seems to have happened in the meantime. And then you just...
We're not
after,
at it.
Not at it, you're after it. Which, again, is fine, because that's what the book is.
Yeah.
But it was a bit boring. And then about the last four or five hours of the audiobook...
Is good again?
It really does... For me, it really picked up again. It's like a 20-hour audiobook, and that last 4 or 5 hours did pick up, and I did enjoy it a lot more. But I don't... For you, not enjoying it so far, it's not worth reading on.
Okay.
I say don't carry on.
Okay.
Delete the... ebook or whatever you do.
I'm always feeling so bad about it.
Paying for an ebook and then not finishing a book.
Oh yeah, I did pay for it.
Doesn't matter. It's on my
but yes,
Apple Books
account. How do you know? I mean,
you don't know. That's the thing. Yeah. That is actually the good thing about Audible credits. audibletrial.com/SFBIP. If you sign up for a subscription plan and you start reading a book, you're not into it, just return it and get a book that you enjoy. You don't have to, it's not a gamble in the same way as paying for an ebook is.
Yeah.
It's much more about like having a paid library subscription.
Yeah,
that if you enjoy the book, you get it to keep it forever. And if you don't enjoy the book, you can just return it for a book that you do, and then you get to keep that forever.
Yeah.
And so.
But I do enjoy going to my library app and doing this. The problem is the selection is bad.
Yeah.
No English books.
Yeah, the translations, if there are, aren't great for a lot of those.
Well, and the selection is just weird.
Lots of Perry Rhodan books, which we did review Perry Rhodan,
no,
so
no,
we can...
No, it doesn't... Like,
oh, they
no.
don't turn up in the library.
No, they don't... No, they don't...
They don't even have Perry Rhodan books in the library.
Exactly.
Not even that. Not even Perry Rhodan. Yes. All right, so I'm going to rate this book 2.5 stars, because, again, I did get through it. I enjoy the parts that I remember enjoying. I enjoyed the parts I don't remember enjoying. It's not that I don't. I remember not enjoying them. I just don't remember them at all. And that happens to me quite a few times when I'm reading a book and going, I had really good memories of this book from 15 years ago. And you realize, oh, you just block out the stuff that you don't like,
of course, the
good stuff sticks with you. So unfortunately, reading it this time, it wasn't strong enough to put aside that nostalgia, which I'm totally fine with having nostalgia tinted reviews in this way.
Sure,
but you not getting into it and then me waiting for you to catch up and you saying, oh, it's taking me too long to catch up, it kind of, I'm not saying it spoiled my enjoyment, but it made me look into my nostalgia muscles and realize that they weren't as strong as they could have been
in
this
book. I destroyed it for you.
No, it's good. Some of these books I'm totally fine to read and reappraise, and it's fine. This book, there wasn't, let's just talk about this. For a book from 1981, not as sexist as I imagined it would be. There's only one or two times I'm like, like at one point someone says, no, you women stay here, men only, women stay behind. And the woman's like, no, let me come and help out. And he's like, no, you stay here, I order it. And she's like, okay, I'll stay back with the old people and the children and do this kind of thing. And the men are out there being heroes. And I'm okay, that's kind of a lot more of a military thing rather than
And it feels more like a comment on it than...
No, it wasn't. No, I don't think it was. It wasn't a comment. I think it's just I think that's just a book that's written in 1981.
Okay.
But that, again, there isn't the, accidental rape scenes and all these other things, but it's like happening. Like, you see movies from the 1980s, these action movies, and you're like, that's his 16-year-old daughter. Don't make jokes about fucking his 16-year-old daughter. That's really weird.
I don't think there was a sex scene up to when I read it.
No, well, there is a bit at the start where someone gets pregnant, but it's again, a lot of the action's referenced. Like, they say, oh, this is going to happen, and then it happens, and then, but it's not a romance. There's no romance in this. But I'm not saying even about that. I'm just saying that, like, there was never a scene where the soldiers rape women just to show how bad the soldiers are. There's lots of scenes where people kill people and they vent people out the airlocks and do all this other kind of stuff. But there wasn't that kind of gratuitous rape thrown in there in a really, like, there's better ways of writing this kind of thing. You know, it was a little bit more in control. And I think it's mainly because, like I say, there's some of these strong women characters in the military. And it seems a lot of the time the military is sort of like, there's men in the military and there's women in the military.
Yeah. So,
and on the union side, all these genetically identical, no, not genetically, like genetically perfect beings, they're all beautiful when they turn up. They're like, oh, everyone's beautiful over there. That is because, and the men are just as capable as the women in there. Even in this book, there are way more male characters than female characters. At least it wasn't like a Larry Niven, Jerry Pournelle book where you read it again for the first time since the 1980s and just like, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've talked about this book for 50 minutes. I think I'm pretty much done.
Yeah.
Anything else to say?
No.
Not as in-depth as some other reviews, but, you didn't read half the book and I was trying to keep it light, but it's a fun discussion that we had.
And we had no written notes.
No notes at all, but that's what we can do with literally no notes and, like I say, reading a passage of somebody else's review out from Goodreads. Let me actually see who did that review.
Who was that?
I'm scrolling down. I can't find it again now. No, I've lost it on the page somewhere. It'll be around here somewhere. Oh, here it is. It was Sean O'Hara, rated it 5 stars.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm friends with him on Goodreads as well.
No, it's not a friend on Goodreads. It's just someone. Maybe you're friends with a different Sean, but this Sean O'Hara, just a random person I just went through and I just saw that little bit and I was like, what's this quote?
That profile picture.
Follow author. Sean O'Hara is an author.
Ah.
So maybe if you've ever heard of Canticle of the Wolves.
Not sure.
I haven't. But I have 3 friends in common. Jenny from Reading Envy, Julie Davis and David Monroe are friends in common with Sean O'Hara. So maybe you have seen his name around. He's a fantasy author. Anyway.
Maybe he has commented on the groups.
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Yeah, but not every person who is in the,
maybe,
the following
maybe
group.
Maybe not. Anyway, so that's it. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Luke Burridge on Instagram. You can follow Juliana on Twitter and Instagram. She is Juliana Kunzendorf on Instagram.
Look.
What's that?
My friend.
Oh, Shauna. Wait a second. Sean O'Hara is your friend and not my friend.
Yeah. Why
is Sean O'Hara your friend and not my friend?
Friends that you don't have.
Oh, look at that, mutual friends with Sean O'Hara. Juliana is right here.
I told you. The thing is,
maybe he is my friend.
You know I'm good in names.
I'm terrible at
names.
I'm
good with stuff like profile pictures, and that's kind of like a very...
Does it? Can I add... Can I? Oh, no, it actually says here, you are friends with Sean.
Ha ha.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Well, he was in the general... he was in the general reviews section rather than just the friends reviews section. Friends of... Oh, no, look. Oh, maybe that's why I saw that review, because it was in the friends reviews. But when I found it again, it was down in the general non-friends reviews.
So, a friend
I'm
and Goodreads.
So bad.
And we...
Sorry, Sean, I'm really bad with names. Really bad with names. Anyway, yeah, you can... Thanks, Sean, for being my friend on Goodreads. That's what you should do. You should check out goodreads.com. Check out the SFBRP listener group on there. And if you stick a book in, books that I would like to see reviewed in that thread or any other of those threads, chances are I will get to it, because I'm always looking for books, new books to read. I can't just keep reading books that I've not that I've read before, like this.
True.
And Red Mars, which I've read. I think I've read that one twice before. The Green Mars and Blue Mars, Blue Mars and Green Mars, which are the next two in the series.
Yeah.
I've only read them once each, and I think that's enough times to read those books. But Red Mars is actually very good.
I actually just had the thought that it would be so nice to have like English translation books, like Stanislaw Lem. Translated from Polish? Czech?
No. Yeah, Polish, I think. Lem was Polish, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I would love way more books by other, by foreign, non-English speaking science fiction authors translated into English and becoming hits in English science fiction.
Well, it has happened. The Three-Body Problem by Xin Liu or something.
Yes.
That was Chinese science fiction, was very big. You know, it was nominated for the Hugo and Nebula and was a bestseller and things like that.
That's very nice.
So it does happen. Like it does happen sometimes, but very rarely.
Yeah.
And when it does happen,
it's big.
It's a bigger news.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, I might check the library app for some weird German science fiction again.
To be honest, Red Mars, there will be a German version of it. Yeah, it is. I think it is.
What's the author again?
Kim Stanley Robinson.
Oh, yeah. Well, Aurora certainly is in the library app, but unfortunately...
I see now. This is the wrong thing to do if I'm reading the Hugo Awards. Red Mars won the Nebula Award.
Aww.
And not the Hugo Award, but then the Green Mars and Blue Mars both won the Hugo Awards. So
yeah, but
that's what I find.
We have to start with Red Mars.
Well, I don't want to read Green and Blue Mars again, because they're kind of long and I didn't enjoy them as much as the Red Mars.
We don't have to do anything with awards.
I'm just saying.
You know awards that are not.
Yes, I know,
anything.
But I'm just saying, like, if I'm going to. Like, I have read all of these books before, but I haven't talked about them on the SFBRP directly. Anyway, that's enough. Become my friends, follow me on Twitter, and actually go to sfbrp.com and check out all the books that are listed on there. Also, a lot of these episodes now are on YouTube. I've fallen a bit behind of that, but if you want to share like a specific point in one of these podcasts, there's all the recent ones are up on YouTube, so you can link directly to the second or the minute or whatever it is, or a section if you're interested in that. I mean, it's just us talking with the picture that we always take.
Yeah.
It's just on the screen and you hear us talking, or me talking or whatever like that. Anyway, that's it. So thanks a lot for listening. Oh, wait a second. We've both had a microphone each. So if you've enjoyed the audio quality slightly more than this one than previously.
Tell us.
Yeah. Well, don't tell us, but we did just buy an extra microphone. And so we both have a microphone each instead of sharing one. So it's maybe slightly better audio quality than our previous two-person podcast. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.